Well, we didn't even get started with that interview and it's over. There was an addition, you know, we were going to do honorable mentions. Duck and Decanter didn't make it on there. And she's like, I know we stop there all the time for staff events, but we wanted it to be, you know, on the road. So we had to get people out to travel. There's Crocs that's at Scottsdale and Thunderbird. And that one's always been a lot of fun to me because you go in there and there's a flag next to the country of the sandwich's origin. So you can go in there and decide what part of the world do I want to eat from today.
I got to give you a new one I really love. It's called Sugar Jam. It's in Scottsdale by the airport. And it's just all kinds of great sandwiches and baked goods. But they have, Romy, a pulled pork sandwich that just about equals Satchmo's. Darn good.
Okay.
Right there by the office, not too far.
Oh, yeah, and you've got Guido's. That's a great Chicago deli as well and meat shop. Fortuno's Italian Deli in Tucson, the 4th Avenue Deli in Tucson. There was that would have been a hard one to write to keep it just to 10. But then that article was followed by this article about these bread crafters on the main street of Coolidge, Arizona, called Mediterranean Bakehouse. I mean, you look at this. Oh,
that's an art.
That's all you want to eat.
Yeah. And I would love to have them on there into the ancient grains and stuff, which I've always had an interest in. So they'd be a fun interview, too.
I got a bread crafter's book just to start learning it, and I haven't started yet because I haven't built my bread oven yet. And but the arena lights and irrigation system comes first. Got to have priorities.
No, we're not foodies around here. Romy's so excited about his sandwiches, we're going to have to pull him away to Douglas this morning.
Well, let's see if we can. We had a little scratch on the line. Let's see if we can get Cindy on the line. Are you with us this morning?
Yes, indeed I am.
There she is.
Thanks for taking a few minutes out. Our staycation travels to Douglas this week, and Lance was doing some research and found the Douglas historian. And
yep, that's me.
Well, you cannot research Douglas history without finding Cindy Hiostick. How are you this morning?
I'm fine, thank you.
I think you have Douglas in your blood.
Yeah, I kind of do. I grew up here. My dad and my grandfather both worked here, so... Yeah, deep roots.
So it's a big job because it's a really rich history. I was
just
amazed.
Oh, there's lots of interesting people, lots of interesting things that happened here. It's so nice that you're going to be sending your staycation people down here because they're going to probably be surprised at the depth of the history here and things to do and things to see.
I think so, too. Rosie's and my goal every year is to try to do every staycation, and this is one I'd really like to do. I just wanted to give a little shout-out. Cindy, you have a chronicle you put out, the Borderland Chronicles, and it's a history magazine.
Right, a little quarterly history magazine about the Douglas Iowa Prieta area and the borderlands here.
Well,
I haven't run out of stories. I've been doing it, 10 years now? Haven't run out of stories yet.
Oh, I want to get into some of those stories, but I just want to let the listeners know if they get their interest piqued, they have a place to go and really get some great follow-up. So, I mean, I think everybody kind of probably knows, you know, the history down there goes back very far to the 1500s. You have the Spanish explorers come up, Cabeza de Vaca being one of the most well-known. And then, you know, just how that history evolved. Why don't you paint a little picture for people what has evolved down there?
Well, you started with Spanish explorers, so let's go with that. Douglas in this particular area took a while to get on everybody's map, particularly because it was part of the Apache territory, and coming here could be a dangerous thing. Douglas itself didn't really evolve and come into being until the 1900s. The town itself started growing in 1901, and it quickly became a railroad center and the site of two copper smelters owned by two different companies. And then all that, of course, attracted business going across the border, back and forth, in agriculture. So Douglas was a busy place in its real early days.
When we talked about just thinking about how busy it must have been, you talked about, for one thing, there was the copper mines. Tell us how Dr. Douglas played a founding role in the town.
Okay, well, Dr. Douglas was indeed that. He was actually a doctor. His name is James Douglas, and he was Canadian-born, so it was his son who had the same name. Dr. Douglas, however, made all his money by inventing an electrolytic copper process. And that brought him to the attention of a, at the time, small company called Phelps Dodge. And they wanted Dr. Douglas to come out here and do some scouting for him. They were interested in buying some mining properties. And so he came out here and poked around and said, yeah, I think you ought to get into Bisbee. I think you ought to get into Morenci. So the short story is the company made him and he made the company. And his son became involved with Phelps Dodge. And in 1909 built the house where I'm sitting and talking to you. It's the Douglas House. And it's now the Douglas Williams Museum, which is where I do a lot of volunteer work. It's a fun little place to come. I hope your staycation people come here and see it on a Saturday afternoon.
I hope so, too. And so you have Dr. Douglas, that family coming down from Canada. And then where does the Williams part come in?
Okay, the Williams part involves some family, a family named Ben Williams, Ben F. Williams. The senior man was Sonoran born. He was born on a little ranch down in Mexico, probably about, hour or so from here. But he had what I call an active mind. And he learned the cattle business, but he also invented things. And one of those inventions made him enough money that he was able to buy this house and moved in here with his wife and some kids. Ben Sr. became Douglas Mayer, and his son, Ben Jr., also was a Douglas Mayer. Douglas success story.
Douglas Williams. And at one time, Douglas was the fourth largest town in Arizona. Was that during
indeed.
This era?
Yeah, indeed. And some of this was due in good part to the copper smelters, because at one point Phelps Dodge's Copper Queen smelter was the second largest smelter in the world. By the time of World War I, when both smelters were running, and Douglas, that the civilian population because of that was about 17,000 people. And Douglas was also the site of a World War I army camp called Camp Harry J. Jones. And it was a cavalry camp, a brigade headquarters. So think 10, 12,000 men and twice as many horses and mules. That's a lot.
Boy, the logistics of that is kind of mind-boggling.
And yeah, and of course that was helped because we had good railroad service. Douglas is the only town in Arizona that had a railroad going out in all four directions. And, of course, stuff came in, especially in that time, to help supply that army camp.
And then, so moving a little forward then, Douglas eventually becomes a real aviation hub.
Yes. And because Douglas was such a vital place, it had so much going on and it attracted some people like Ben Williams with active minds. And in the 20s, they formed Arizona's first chapter of what was the National Aeronautic Association. And this was basically people who were enamored of aviation. And they put together a municipal airport, and it became, within a few years, one of the top 10 airports in the country. And this was because it had big-time features. It had lights, which is it was the only lighted airport between Texas and L.A., California. And it was also well done. It was a well-run airport, and it attracted a number of really interesting things. Will Rogers flew through here several times. It was part of a circuit of air races. So in 1929, what's commonly known as the Powder Puff Derby was here, which was a air race for women. So we had
must have had Amelia Earhart then.
Amelia Earhart, Pancho Barnes, Louise Sadin, all the big time names in female aviation were here for this air race, and got formally feted. They were wined and dined.
It was the first airport between Texas and California, Romy. Can you imagine flying a little plane over that vast amounts of desert?
Oh, yeah.
You have to be really good at your aviation skills.
Seat of your pants flying, really. Seat of your pants flying. But Douglas, again, was well-connected. At one point, the airport manager was a fellow named Smith, and Mr. Smith later became one of the folks that put together the McDonnell Douglas Corporation, which invented, well, not invented, developed is the right word, the DC-3. And the DC-3's inaugural flight, its test flight, went through Douglas, Arizona, because of Mr. Smith's connections here and the quality of the airport.
Wow. And so when people come to visit you, they can find all these stories at the museum that you are now, the Douglas House Museum.
Right, and right. There's also, since we were talking aviation, mm-hmm. there's also a small aviation museum here that has those some of the stories that I've just told you and some other ones. It also has within it a Trojan airplane. Now, Douglas, because of this aviation heritage, kept it going way past World War II. And after the war, a gentleman named Harold Emmy invented a small plane that he called the Trojan. And it was kind of like a Piper Cub, but it was designed to be an everyman's plane. And it was built here. He moved the factory from California to here. And because the Korean War started up and he went back in the Army, only about 100 of the planes were made. They're well-known within the industry, let's put it that way. Anyway, there's one on display in that museum that's out by the municipal airport.
And y'all have some beautiful older buildings that are being enhanced, too. If you walk in downtown Roma, you see things are pretty plain, but if you go inside, they're very ornate. We'll talk, and we'll talk in a couple of weeks about the Gadsden. But also
I was just going to mention that because your staycation people are going to be staying in the Gadsden. And the Gadsden is one of those buildings that is so typical Douglas. From the outside, it just looks like a building, you know, plain and ordinary. And then you go inside, and it'll knock your socks off because it's got stained glass windows, this wide sweeping staircase up to a mezzanine. It's got pillars topped with gold leaf. It's something else again.
Cindy, thank you so much for letting us share Douglas with our Arizona homeowners and listeners. We have just a great view now of what it looks like down there.
Well, and we'll be covering Douglas all month long here in our Arizona Staycation Hour. Rosie on the house. The answer to the trivia question, I missed this going out because I was too busy with sandwiches, but it's false. Douglas was originally called Blackwater, not Redwater. And it was thought to be due to the terrible water quality the early settlers were faced with. But the town south of Douglas in Mexico kept the name. And then one of the interesting things that really surprised me, a gentleman by the name of Tom Reining, who was one of Teddy's Rough Riders after being stationed in Douglas, penned, "I've been in many rough town in my day, from Deadwood to Tombstone, but I've never met up with a harder formation than in Douglas."